Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Ladies and gentlemen, live from the Netherlands and Camarillo, California, it is...
It's another edition of Marketing Geeks with your hosts, Justin Womack, the Inspirer,
and Andro Sturgeon, the guy.
A guy that goes to Burning Man a lot.
In a world filled with podcasts, one podcast.
Two men will make a difference where others have only failed.
I was going to say two men will also have a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen.
Sure, why not?
Live from everywhere, globally, it is the Marketing Geeks.
Welcome, 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 everybody. God, I feel inspired. This is just amazing.
This.
I think I could take over the world. I'm going to start another business today just because of this intro music.
That's right. That's right. And where did we get this intro music?
This intro music comes from audiojungle.net. It is the free track available for September 2018 on audiojungle.net. That's a good one. I like that
It's a good one, yeah. Here's a little life hack for those of you who do not know. Now, one of the things that we geek out about here at Marketing Geeks is the fact that there's a couple of websites that we like to go and platforms, you know, that we like to visit because they give out free stuff or they, you know, they and we'll go over these over the next few weeks. But one of our favorites is AudioJungle. Which is actually part of the Envato platform. And there you can buy templates and for like After Effects and different sound effects and music. But every month they give out a free track. And this is, we're not getting paid by this. This is just a little thing that we do. We love doing it, so we're sharing it with you. But if you go to Audio Jungle, you can get a free track every month. And that we just played was the free track of the month. And a lot of times it's really good stuff. This one is actually, I like this track. I'll probably use it on something.
Yeah, it's very cinematic. I mean, I really enjoy it. And it's a $29 value because actually that's what they charge on the site. Starting in October, it'll be $29 again. So get it now while it's free.
Yeah, so if you head on over to audiojungle.com, you know, you can download this. .net. And they have other ones like Video Hive. They have and you can download all of them. So every month, one of the cool things that we like to do is go over there and get the freebie of the month. And so we recommend that you do that too. And again, we're not endorsed by them. Although if anybody at the Envato company does want to sponsor us, we would not say no to that.
We'll think about it.
Think about it. We're out of our, you know, because we do have 7 listeners. And so, you know, everyone's vying for our advertising dollars. So I was gone last week, and you held down the fort by yourself.
I held down the fort by myself. You know, I had my solo rendition episode. It was it wasn't the same. It was okay. It was but you know, if I wanted to,
was it like Garth trying to do Wayne's World by himself? Is that
it was a lot like Garth doing Wayne's World, where I'm just sitting there, I'm having a good time. Not.
Well, I did have a good time. I was at Burning Man, and I would love to talk about a little bit quickly about Burning Man, the Burning Man Festival, and what I discovered there. Because one of the things that I love about going to Burning Man every year, this is my 19th year, not in a row. I missed last year because I was in the process of moving to the Netherlands. And I did miss the year my son was born because he was 2 weeks away from being born, and his mother was not keen on going to Burning Man, and she felt that there was a possibility I could miss his birth, being that by the time I got back, it was only 1 week away. So when I suggested...
If Elon Musk owned Burning Man, you would have been fired.
Look, I told her at the time, I said, why don't you just go out to Burning Man with me, and because every doula in the world is probably going to be there. And you'll be fine, right? I mean, if you give birth at Burning Man, how cool would that be? And she just...
It's a legend. Yeah. Legend.
She just looked at me for a long time and said nothing else. And so I got the feeling...
It sounds...
That
wasn't... It sounds great, but I could totally picture the reaction. The reaction wouldn't come out as good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you just had a baby, so how would Laura... I mean, Laura would do that, right? She'd go to Burning Man and have a baby there, right?
No? Yeah, totally. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, sure. Why not?
That's why you married her. So, So, Burning Man, first of all, for those who are uninitiated of our, you know, three of the seven listeners who may not know, Burning Man is a giant festival out in the Nevada desert. They build this temporary city. It's the third largest city in all of Nevada when it's built. There's 75,000 people out there. And it is like going to Oz. It is unlike any other experience you will ever have. It started off as a small little event where a guy named Larry Harvey, who unfortunately just passed away this year, decided that he was going to have a renewal ceremony. And so he went to a beach in San Francisco and built a little effigy to kind of signify his own renewal of some experiences that he went through. And he burned it, and they had a big party. And it was so, like, fun that they decided to do it again the next following year on the beach. So they started going every year, and the thing just, like, doubled in size each year. And so before you knew it, there were hundreds and hundreds of people on the beach, thousands of people on the beach. Finally, the authorities came in. They shut down the event, and so they knew they wanted to keep it going. So they went to the Nevada desert, the Black Rock Desert, which is outside, 2 hours outside of Reno. It's in a prehistoric lake bed. And it looks like something out of a Salvador Dali painting. It's just completely flat. And what they do every year is they build this temporary city with art and these, you know, building size pieces of art that they burn down to the ground. And at the end of the week, there's a giant effigy of a man, and it's several stories high. And they burn it down to the ground, but they also have this temple. And the temple is pretty amazing because during the week, people go in there and they write things on the walls and they, you know, memorials to past friends who've died or relationships that have fallen apart or things they want to move through, traumas. And, you know, you go in there and it's very cathartic. People are crying and holding each other and meditating. And, you know, it's just really very personal. And at the very last thing of the week on Sunday night, they burn that to the ground. And whereas the Saturday night burn, when they burn the man, everyone's like yelling and screaming and there's this fireworks. And, you know, go online. You can see video of it. It's incredible. Like it's a spectacle. It's like the biggest spectacle, explosions. It's like amazing. And then but the temple burn is cathartic and quiet. So you have about 30,000 people who are just silently watching this burning building while people are silently crying as they're releasing their trauma. And it's a spiritual experience. It's very deep. But one of the things that I really love about it, there's a couple of things. Number one, they have never done any type of advertising. The entire thing has been simply by word of mouth. So the way that the festival has grown has been simply by people going to it because of their love for it. Now, in the first year that I went, which was 1997, they were up kind of against an existential crisis because the tickets were only $68, and they were running out of money because the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, who issues the permit, raised the cost of the permit. And so after the events, they were actually losing a lot of money, and they didn't know what to do because also they insisted that law enforcement go, which I have mixed feelings about, but they also insisted that the Burning Man organization pay for all the law enforcement. So what they had to raise the ticket prices, and they had to figure out what to do to.
So what do tickets cost nowadays?
Well, they're about $450, but they also have like they'll give gift tickets. They'll have like different different levels that you can buy a ticket. So if you want to guarantee your ticket, you can buy a $1,200 ticket at the like in December, and that way you know you're going to get a ticket. I'm part of a camp called Burners Without Borders, and Burners Without Borders is a group of people who they do all sorts of relief for like hurricane relief. They'll go in because if you can build a theme camp in the middle of a raging dust storm, you can also build temporary shelters for people who are in need. So it's a pretty cool organization in general, just in that. And so you have these different theme camps, and sometimes the theme camps will revolve around an art car or a certain theme. Now, what has been very interesting about this, and so this is how this ties into marketing, is that there's been a lot of companies that have decided to give away some of their product or their services. So a couple of things about the Burning Man event. Number one, you cannot sell anything. And the only things that you can buy, and you're in the middle of the desert, right? You're not near any kind of store. You can't buy anything. You just are dealing with what you have. So you can buy ice for $4, and you can buy like a big chunk of ice, or you can buy coffee in Center Camp, which costs about $3. And that's it. You can't buy anything else. And it's a gift.
Coffee, is it like Starbucks coffee or is it just some like generic coffee?
Well, that's the thing. You can't brand anything out there. You can't like have a brand. You can't like advertise. You can't say like, you can't put up a billboard. So you can't do any kind of promotional thing. So in 1996, when I went, they were up against this existential crisis because they weren't able to afford the event anymore. They were running out of money. And Coca-Cola and Red Bull came in and they said, tell you what, you sell our product in Center Camp in our Coca-Cola cups and we'll basically pay your bills. And the Burning Man organization basically said, we would rather not have there not be a Burning Man. We'd rather kill the event completely than have to deal with that. So because they wanted to keep it pure and keep it word of mouth. So over the years, there has been companies that have done community service. So, for instance, in 2006, I was out there and it was a really, really hot day. And we were thinking, God, we'd love some ice cream. And all of a sudden, we saw a big group of people walking away with ice cream. And so we ran up to where somebody was giving out ice cream. And it was an ice cream truck. And they just had little signs that said, like, Chunky Monkey, Wavy Gravy. And we were like, oh, my God, are they giving out Ben and Jerry's ice cream? And and Ben and Jerry were out there giving out ice cream just to people for free. And that was really smart because they weren't advertising that they were Ben and Jerry, but they're obviously the face of the company. And so to this
very
day,
very recognizable. Yes.
Very recognizable. And so are the names of their flavors. And that's all they could put. But they couldn't put a big sign that said Ben and Jerry. But here's the thing. Here I am 12 years later, right? And I am basically talking about Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I am an evangelist for that brand, because they gave it away for free in the desert 12 years ago, right? And so,
very cool.
Yeah, and so this is kind of a common occurrence. So, for instance, there's another camp that they call Foam Against the Machine, and you have to bring out your own shower. So a lot of people don't shower during the week, but they do have a public shower where you can go into this giant camp. Everybody gets naked. There's a DJ in there. This famous artist named Alex Gray is painting. Live painting, and they put you like in a big booth with a bunch of other naked people, and they spray you down with foam, and the foam is obviously Dr. Bronner's soap, right? And it used to be called Dr. Bronner's Camp, but they got rid of the name. Now they name it Foam Against the Machine, but everybody knows what it is. So during the week when you're hot and dusty, you can go get a free foam cleaning with Dr. Bronner's. It's sponsored by Dr. Bronner's, but nobody says that. They also had a gigantic art car that looks like a cathedral. And if you go online, you can just look up art cars at Burning Man. This thing was immense. It was the size of a building, and it looked like a giant cathedral. And that was sponsored by Uber. And everybody knew that, but it at no point was Uber's name ever mentioned. So the thing that I find extremely satisfying and wonderful about Burning Man itself is that there are companies that go out there and they do soft advertising, but it's all like word of mouth. Even the event itself, when tickets go on sale, it sells out in about 30 minutes, like 70,000 tickets instantly. And again, this is all word of mouth. So that's one aspect of the event that I really like. The other aspect of the event that I love is that the people that go out there are the smartest tech people in Silicon Valley and all over the world. The smartest artists, the smartest. So like, for instance, the guy that I wrote up with was this guy named Rob Ross. And he is the Silicon Valley player. He lives in San Francisco. And he was like head of business development for Microsoft and part of like all these acquisitions for different companies. And so we talked a lot about kind of marketing and you know, tech and blockchain and all this stuff. So it was fascinating to me because the people that you meet are just so incredibly brilliant, and it's like anybody you talk to, you can just suddenly have this conversation about technology or spirituality or anything like that. But one of the people that I talked to, and this is again part of geek marketing, it was a guy who is he was running a platform that was one of the top advertising platforms on the internet, and their clients were like Tumblr, the Huffington Post, and so when you go to these websites, those advertisements that show up on these particular websites that feed you kind of targeted advertising, he ran that platform. It was owned by Yahoo. And they changed the name to Oath. And interesting thing, I said, so how's it going? Like, how are you doing with that particular platform now that an ad blocker is basically built into Chrome and you can get all these other extensions and, you know, advertising is really hard? And he goes, well, a few years ago, we were the number one, like we made millions and millions of dollars a month, but we're sunsetting the program. In fact, by the end of next month, I'm out of a job. So this
leads That's interesting. To... That's like super. So the ad blockers have been that disruptive to this market, huh?
Absolutely.
Is that the reason he gave? The reason he gave there, was the ad blockers.
That was the ad blockers. So that is the fascinating thing, where the nature of advertising just in the past few years has completely shifted from targeted advertising. And he was kind of laying out how the platform worked. So, you know, in Facebook advertising, where you can like target certain types of demographics down to like income level and, you know, whether or not somebody has just had a baby or anything like this, he said that
for now, until they change that. But yeah,
right. Exactly. But he said that his platform is like that on steroids. So he can actually get down to so granular that it's like males who are 35 who have a Mercedes-Benz, but they're thinking of buying a Lexus, and they also like Justin Bieber, but they only like these songs. Like really like way down to the very minute level, and he could feed up the data to these huge companies like Coca-Cola and whatever. But and it was very successful, but they're sunsetting the program. It's like it's not going to exist. So the question then for all of you marketing geeks out there is twofold. Number one, how do you market in this day and age when traditional marketing is literally dying on the vine real time? And number two, how do you create a circumstance like a Burning Man situation where you're giving away a product where you're also marketing? So, you know, that's
part of that. I mean, the examples you gave, a lot of those, part of that is having a strong brand to begin with to be able to pull that stunt off. And it's not necessarily a stunt, but you know what I mean? Like Ben and Jerry, if they were just two random guys giving out ice cream, it wouldn't have the same impact as the fact that, okay, well, these are like billionaires or I don't know, they're high net worth individuals giving out their ice cream, and we recognize them, we recognize the flavors, so it's something we recognize. Whereas if it was just, again, like a mom and pop ice cream shop doing it, I mean, it'd be awesome, but it wouldn't be as memorable because they spent the time and built their brand ahead of time too. So they're leveraging it. So that's important here to mention.
Right. And so you know, something that Justin and I talk about is the rule of seven, in that it takes seven exposures of your brand for it to kind of stick in someone's mind. And so the rule of seven is highly important when it comes to particular marketing, because you're right. If it was a mom and pop, and my first experience with this mom and pop was their serving, you know, ice cream at Burning Man, I may never run into that brand again, right? So the rule of seven wouldn't apply. But because Ben and Jerry are the brand and their face is the brand marketing, seeing their face live and in person in front of me is like, oh my God, that's them. And so it reinforces the branding that I'm already accustomed to. So the thing that
I want to add just one thing. When companies go out of their way and do things like this, like good deeds, or you know, they help people, what it also does is it creates, we talked about in that episode on influence, we talked about like reciprocity. So if somebody does something nice for you, it gives you you'll have like a sense of guilt if you don't reciprocate in some way. So people are more likely to then share the story. Like they might put it on a podcast, for instance, or they might go and put it on social media. They're gonna share that story, and it's free marketing. That's also like the how you could launch a viral campaign in a lot of ways. I would say exactly.
Yeah. So this is like the Tom Shoes thing that I think I've mentioned before, which is that Tom Shoes, when you go to their website, their whole branding is if you buy a pair of shoes, they give a pair of shoes to someone in need. And so and also when you're talking about a lot of millennials. These days, the way that they shop and the types of jobs that they wish to work in, statistics have shown that they want to be part of a cause. It used to be that a company really wanted to be kind of apolitical and take no stance on anything. But now you have to show that you're doing some sort of public good. People want to be part of some sort of movement, right?
On that note, I want to mention something. I want to come back to Burning Man, but I do want to pause for a second and mention the Nike ad that just got released with Colin Kaepernick. Have you seen this? I mean, because we were talking about cause-based marketing. So you want to talk about this is a little bit different in terms of they're actually investing money into a campaign. But they're investing a fraction of like a regular campaign into this Colin Kaepernick ad that talks about how I can't remember the exact words that are used, but believe in something even if it means sacrificing everything, essentially.
Right, exactly. And so for those of you, just a quick Cliff Notes version of the Colin Kaepernick story. He spearheaded kind of a movement within the NFL where he started kneeling during the national anthem, not to be disrespectful to the flag, but because he wanted to make a statement about the fact that every day in America, an unarmed black man is shot and killed by the police on average. And very hot button issue. You know, I'm not taking a stance on it either way. I'm just saying that, you know, this was a man who decided to exercise his First Amendment free speech rights.
But it started before Trump was even elected too. So it actually started when Obama was still in office, and it was bringing awareness to all the cop shootings and things like that. And that's how it started. And then obviously it ballooned into something even bigger when politicians got involved
Right. And although Colin Kaepernick was a very good player and, you know, was a first round draft pick for several years, he became so hot that nobody would sign him. So he basically was out of the NFL. And so for Nike to use him as the face of this campaign, very daring, because they knew that it would be like a hot button issue. But somewhere somebody did the market research and they ran the numbers and they said, well, we're going to lose some people, but we're also going to gain some people. And they wouldn't have done it if they felt that it wasn't going to give them some sort of boost on some level in the long run. But what's funny is like people started burning their Nike shoes in protest and putting that up. But what's funny about that is even when someone is burning their Nike shoes in protest, and this is probably something that they thought about when they ran this campaign, people are going to do that. You are still advertising for Nike, right? Because as the flames are coming off the shoes, there's like the Nike logo, and it's still advertising.
It depends on your belief system on that, but I am a believer, like, yeah, there's no such thing as bad press in a lot of ways because you're getting the exposure over and over and over again. Rule of seven, again.
Right.
They did some research already and said in the 24 hours since they launched this campaign, which is like Monday or Tuesday of this week, Nike has gotten $43 million worth of media exposure in less than 24 hours of launching it. So they calculated that the value of the media was $43 million on a campaign that probably cost them like $1 million or, you know, I'm sure a fraction of that. to get a lot.
Right. And so and that's the point, right? So it's like somebody, they, you know, and I used to work in market research, and so we would run focus groups. So, I mean, they obviously ran some focus groups. They, like, you know, held up, like, the ads before they ran. They asked a bunch of people. They did the numbers. They, like, you know, there was a lot of math involved. But at the end of the day, Nike said, well, you know what? We're going to lose some people, but we're going to also gain a lot in notoriety, and we're going to gain a lot in, like, people who – we're going to lose people, but we're going to also gain a lot.
They'll gain some. I mean, people that are political that may not otherwise buy Nike gear will probably come on board to support because it's, like, a cause now. And yeah, and they're definitely going to lose. You're definitely going to lose some people that believe that it's a disrespect to the flag and the military. So that crowd that has that belief system is definitely going to be. Well, they're going to lose some of them, and some of them will probably just keep buying the product anyway. So I'm sure they did their research.
Some people who are like, you know what? Right, and there's going to be also other people who are going to be like, you know what? Because Nike made a stand, I'm going to buy some Nike products. So, you know, they weigh that out. But what this comes down to is a couple of things. Number one, it's about the idea of how advertising, which when I was growing up and I would watch Saturday morning cartoons and eat sugar cereal until, you know, my Captain Crunch made stalactites of flesh hang down from the roof of my mouth. And I would be advertised over and over with McDonald's commercials. And by noon, I just wanted McDonald's because I had been inundated with McDonald's commercials. The McDonald's commercials were better produced than the cartoons I was watching. This was in the 70s, right? And nowadays, you know, I'm watching my son right now. You hear him laughing? He's watching Netflix. He doesn't watch commercials. In fact, when he watches YouTube, sometimes, I mean, I don't put him in front of a tablet all the time. We're going to go to a museum later today. But when he watches something on YouTube and there's an ad, he knows to watch for that countdown, 3, 2, 1, and he hits skip ad. The kid isn't – he's three. He's 3 years old, right? And he knows to skip ads. He doesn't watch any advertising. So a whole new generation of people with ad blockers – and with you know, the ability to skip advertising and not watch any kind of advertising at all, they are not growing up with traditional advertising. So then the question is, how do you reach people in a way that do your marketing in a way that has a message, will alienate people, but will also bring clients, or you gift something in a way like Ben and Jerry did at Burning Man, or you create the most epic art car in the world, and when you get on, you hear through the grapevine that it's done by Uber. So then next time you take an Uber, it's like, oh, I rode on that giant Uber art car, right? So just watching how everything is shifting in the marketplace, marketing in general really comes down to how your business tells its story. And so this is something that Justin and I are extremely passionate about, which is the storytelling aspect of business. If you don't really tell your story with your business or tell a story for your clients, if you're a marketer, you're not gonna make it, because traditional Facebook advertising, especially as Facebook loses market share, I mean, there's
danger of them being subject to regulation now too. I mean, because Congress has been rumored to be stepping in. I mean, that's not just them, all social media platforms. But that's also potentially down the pipeline. But I wanted to just add one thing about the advertising stuff here. And that's that, like we mentioned before, companies are being a little bit bolder this day and age, and they are taking political stands. And part of that, in my theory, is that it's harder now to be like a brand that reaches everybody. And I think because the mediums are changing, so we don't, like, television doesn't, you know, you can't just advertise on television as easy as it used to be. Because, I mean, people aren't watching TV as much, or they're skipping ads, and ad blockers are out there. So now I think what's happening is companies are realizing that they're going to have to segment down. So they're going to have to take their brands and segment,
right,
and buy taking a stand on something that's hot, like a hot political issue. Yeah, they're going to alienate a big chunk of people, but they're also going to strengthen relationships with the ones that stand behind it, and they're going to bring a different section on. And I think what we're seeing is a trend where the big brand that, again, appeals tries to sell to everybody, they try to sell their product to everyone, is a thing that's slowly going away. So companies like Coke, McDonald's, a lot of them, they're not as powerful as they were, you know, 10, even 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right. So, and it's got to be, it's also got to be authentic, because if you remember,
good point.
You know, for those of you who don't remember, Khloe, there was one of the with the young Kardashian, I don't forget her name, but one sure. of the Kardashians. But she, they did an, I think it was Pepsi did an advertising spot with her where she was modeling, and then all of a sudden there's like a big protest going on outside, and she like became part of this movement, and it was, it happened at the, in the middle of like the, during, it wasn't Occupy, but it was like the Me Too movements were starting. And so it was this inauthentic ad where she became part of this movement, but the movement wasn't really stated. It was just kind of like showing that people were in the streets standing for something, Pepsi, right? And it backfired so badly because it just felt contrived, right? So the thing is that, as you said, you got to make a stand, but it's got to be for something real. You can't just like have some fake marketing thing where you're like, yes, we're behind, you know, you've got to really like do something. And so the trends now, I mean, especially with like Me Too movements and the, you know, the NFL kneeling and these sort of things, the trend now is to, for companies to really have to make a stand about where they are and integrate it into their story. Otherwise, you know, we're, you're lost. One of the things that I talk about is like with Chipotle, when I do my public talks, I talk about how I used to mention the word Chipotle versus McDonald's, and people would say with Chipotle, oh, well, that stands for healthy food. It stands for like locally sourced. It stands for, you know, that was part of their stories until people started getting sick from that food. And now E. coli is part of their story and they can't shake it, right? So you got to be very careful about how you tell your story, because there can also be a lot of things that backfire. I mean, say what you will about our current president in the United States, but one thing he's good at is playing the story to his base, right?
And he's good at organic marketing, because every time he tweets, like somebody writes a story about it. So,
right, yeah. exactly. And so and that's how, you know, he was able to run for president without spending any money whatsoever, really. Because people were hanging on to every word. And just as like someone burning Nike shoes is really an advertisement for Nike, him saying something that is like sparking a controversy is also people just talking about it.
And even, but also like think about like Colin Kaepernick, the person, as like his own personal brand too. I mean, he was a very good NFL player. He was a starting quarterback for a time, but he was never – he hadn't won a Super Bowl. He wasn't. He may have gone on and won some. And I mean, that's nobody knows. But his, you know, taking a stand for him has like completely changed his profile. He's now looked at. And I heard some quotes of people comparing him to Muhammad Ali, and he's now like looked at as a civil rights leader. He's on the cover of Time magazine when he started doing the protest. He's very much compared to these big civil rights leaders now. And that was, in a lot of ways, I mean, organic. I mean, if we want to talk about personal branding, but organic marketing, I mean, he created this entire brand for himself through his protest.
That's right. So. And had to pivot his career. So what this means for you out there in business land and marketing land is that when you move forward with marketing campaigns, it can't just be about advertising. It's got to be about making a statement and telling a story. And as we move forward further into the 21st century, all companies are going to have to consider this in their marketing. So, for instance, when I work with clients, when before it was just like, all right, we'll set up a Facebook advertising campaign. We'll run some Google AdWords for you and, you know, blah, 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 you know, easy peasy. Get to your market segments, just put an advertisement in front of them a bunch of times. Now it is, we need to attract someone with the story that you tell and how you tell it. And so, you know, this takes a lot more creativity and a lot more thought with that.
I don't think it doesn't have to be like on a hot button political issue, but yes, but you have to tell a story and you have to segment down. So you can't, I think so many people, because I mean, you know, you and I have met with lots of clients over the years, will always they'll always say that, you know, I don't want to alienate people. I want to reach everyone with my message. But the reality is this is shifting faster than I even thought before. But that's not going to work at all soon. It still works a little bit that if you put down a message that's trying to reach everyone, it'll be watered down and won't be as powerful. It could still work a little bit. But as the climate shifts here, as the young generation becomes older and has more of the buying power, it's going to be that you have to segment down. Now, you don't have to take a hot button political stance necessarily, but you have to take a stance on some key issues, and you have to alienate some of your base in order to deepen the relationship with the ones you care about. And that's a big changing landscape, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if you have any questions about this, you can always connect with us on LinkedIn, and we'll be happy to, you know, just, you know, ask us a question. We love talking
to you. Just answer them, I think.
Yeah.
We'll answer them.
We will answer them. Definitely. Definitely. So
that's what we'll do.
Anyway, guess what? Oh, you know what that is. All right. All right. It's time for the Marketing Geeks Sex Robot Report. Sex Robot.
Get ready for it. Get ready.
All right.
Well, I got a little horn there.
Yeah. You know what's happening there, baby. Oh, yeah. Come on, robot. All right.
What do you got for us? What do you got for us?
All right. This is from the Daily Star in the UK. Headline, sex robot boom driven by social media fueled loneliness, reveals internet porn boss. So sex robots' popularity is being driven by social media fueled loneliness as people become increasingly isolated. And the internet, this one internet porn boss reveals, how do you become an internet porn boss? And does that say that on your business card? I want to know, like, you know, Patrick Garcia, internet porn boss. You know,
I'd love to be quoted on this article, but if you're going to interview me, just make sure to cite me as the internet porn giant.
I honestly, like, I would put that on, as the name on my door. Like, if someone comes in, just internet porn boss. Like, how do I get that job? So, all right, sex dolls are increasingly sophisticated. Sex robots are booming in popularity, with brothels popping up all around the world. We talked about that in our sex robot report a couple of weeks ago. And last week, Daily Star Online revealed that the world's first sex robot porn film has now been released by Prime. Really? That's...
Wow, I'm intrigued.
Rule 47...
Is it on Netflix yet?
I don't know. Rule 47 of the internet, folks. And if you don't know what that is, just Google it. Patrick Garcia, head of development at the internet porn giant, weighed on the rise of sex robots.
Internet porn giant.
I want that on my card. He revealed that he believes loneliness driven by social media is fueling the desire for sex robots when speaking to the Daily Star Online. The porn boss added that he believes sex robots will also help cater the rise of niche sexual desires. So this is kind of interesting. Like, yeah. First of all, like, you know, we are becoming kind of more isolated due to the rise of. Like,
can I say though? Isn't sex with a sex robot kind of already a niche? Isn't that already a niche thing? We're gonna niche down even more. We're gonna get some handcuffs involved and whatever else happens.
You know, look, if. Now, here's the interesting thing that I wonder about, and this is like honestly, there's a couple of sort of byproducts of having a sex robot culture. Number one, if you have a sex robot who basically has an AI algorithm in there that responds to your particular flavor of whatever, right? It's like whatever your little kink is, your sex robot will respond exactly the way that you want and learn from your wants and desires. That means that you have, and as the technology gets better and better, you have a sexual partner that is absolutely perfect for you in every single way. And there is going to be I guarantee you, there's going to be a mental condition that people are going to suffer from that will be basically men. I assume it's going to be mostly men, some women, who will not be able to relate to real women, because they have been, like, their brains have been rewired because of sex
robots. If there's not one, I mean, who writes like the mental disorders? Because I mean, they have the DSM, right? The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. Now, who decides like what is one? Because we should write to them and we should get ahead of this, and maybe we can brand it too, like.
Maybe we can have like a support group, or I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, we
You
should
know,
get ahead of
listen,
it. We got to get ahead of it. This is good. This is good.
all I know is that I am in the wrong business. I got to get out of marketing and get into the sex robot industry because that's where the money is. That's where the money's going to be. And
Now,
I have.
does virtual reality play, is that at all worrisome about the sex robot market, that virtual reality could be so realistic that that sex robots would just be too expensive and obsolete? Is that a future
Well,
that you are worried
I
about?
actually, to tell you the truth, I think that there's going to be a combination of augmented reality and sex robot tech. So basically, you could have like a torso, right? And instead of like the robot looking like kind of a stunned mannequin, you can like project you could project a because I mean there is somebody
So is
out
it
there
just a
who.
torso though? So like if somebody came into the room while it was happening, it would just be like
And
a
when you
torso
say
that you're
came
with?
into the room, you mean came into the room.
I'll let you decide what I meant there.
So yeah, I mean basically, if you have a torso, you could project like Scarlett Johansson with augmented reality onto the torso, and that's probably what I see more as the future being, because then you can like reskin it kind of, and there'll be companies that will basically sell these 3D sort of projection
Will
models.
there be like actresses that sell the rights to their likeness for
Absolutely.
big money?
Absolutely. Well, let me tell you something.
Don't know
Scarlett
that
Johansson is like,
somebody would
I
do
will
that.
sell my likeness, and for every like projection onto a sex robot, augmented reality projection, I
Royalties.
get royalties, like $1,000 or whatever. Yes, there will be people like, I would do that. I'm sure people, I mean, I couldn't sell it for a thousand, but maybe
I don't know
like
how many women are going to be buying that one, but I'm glad
I would sell
to
mine. I would sell mine for $49.99, and when I say $49.99, I mean 49 cents. That's rounded up to 50 cents
And
for my
99 micro
likeness.
pennies.
That's right, in Bitcoin. So anyway, it is kind of interesting, and I do think that as people become more isolated, this technology will be, But that said, we also have Tinder, which is really interesting because it's gamified naughty
A different
time.
form of
Yeah. So that
gamified naughty time. I like
gamified naughty time. That is the name.
that was another edition of the Sex Robot
Oh
Report on
yeah,
Marketing
that's
Geeks.
right. Mama, mama.
Oh, slow it down. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. All
Bow
right.
chicka
Join us
bow
again next
wow.
week, folks, when we have another episode of Marketing Geeks with the Sex Robot Report.
That was fun.
Other news, marketing news, kind of interesting. Amazon, this is from Marketing Land. Amazon streamlines ad products under a new Amazon advertising brand. So what they're doing is they had all these different sort of segmented Amazon advertising platforms, AMS, AMG, AAP, and that was the Amazon Media Group, that was the Amazon Marketing Services, and that was the Amazon advertising platform. And they're going to retire all of those, and they're basically bringing it under the new what they're calling the Amazon Advertising Platform, which is called the DSP. So it's interesting because we talked about how people are bailing from Facebook. I mean, I personally have stopped contributing any sort of data to Facebook whatsoever. I'm not posting anything anymore, and I'm not alone. There's a lot of people who are now not doing as much Facebooking as they used to. So if Facebook doesn't get as many eyeballs, they're losing market share with their advertising. And of course, Amazon sees a huge opportunity here, so they're reformatting their advertising platform so they can take some of that market share.
Yeah, I think there's a big opportunity for them because everybody's shopping on Amazon these days. And I mean, I don't know what kind of ads they're showing now, but if they open up that market, I think that's a huge opportunity, and they smell blood in the water with Facebook because Facebook is a wounded animal right now. They're a wounded animal.
That's right. That's right. Which is also a sex robot that I'd like to invent.
The Facebook animal. Wounded animal.
That's right. Someone out there will buy it, I'm telling you.
One other marketing story before was that Elon Musk went on the Joe Rogan podcast on like Monday of this week or Tuesday. I don't know, a few days ago. And
he was at Burning Man, by the way.
He was at Burning Man first. Okay. Yeah. So he came. He's probably still a little bit high or something. I don't know.
This is why he smoked a joint on the Joe Rogan program, because he was just.
He smoked a joint, and then there's some controversy that he didn't inhale, and it was like. People were ripping him for not inhaling. It was like the opposite of the Bill Clinton controversy, where people were, you know, he had to save face by not inhaling. Now he's taking heat because he didn't inhale potentially. But apparently the backlash he's had his problems recently. So he's had some run-ins with his company and shareholders and the media. But apparently the COO of Tesla resigned this week following that interview. And I don't know if that was a direct result or if that was coincidental timing, or if they, you know, if the two were related or not. But the COO of Tesla dropped out, and then Tesla stock took like a 6% hit, I think, and it recovered a little bit after that.
Well, but, it's also been dropping. Now, this is interesting. Going back to like the story that you tell of your business, you know, Tesla, you know, Elon Musk, a lot of his what he does is kind of smoke and mirrors, and there's because he'll talk about like colonizing Mars, but you know, that's probably never going to happen. However, it is good advertising for his brand, and he's one of the only billionaires who's actually trying to do something kind of innovative and interesting.
It tells a story of somebody that's, they have big vision. It tells a story of a gigantic vision, right? I mean, that's what I see.
Right.
And like the Tesla and creating like the electronic cars like everywhere. I mean, big vision.
Yeah, he does have amazing big vision, but sometimes it can backfire. And one of the things that happened, if you haven't followed this story, which is kind of interesting, when those Thai boys were stuck in that cave in Thailand, what he did was he immediately got his crew to come up with this small submarine that he felt could go in and rescue those boys. Now, a lot of people felt that that was kind of a marketing ploy. It was just him, that the idea wasn't really that valid, but it was a way for him to kind of get his brand out there and, you know, have some sort of show that Tesla is like this innovative company. And one of the rescuers went on Twitter and basically criticized him for using it as a market ploy. So what Elon Musk did in a moment of anger was he accused this guy of being a pedophile.
He's like doubled down on. He like doubled down on it again recently.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the things that I mean, it was dumb of him because he got a lot of flack for that. And I got to admit, like, I don't know, you know, the guy that he's referring to, I have no idea. Nobody has any idea what this guy does in his
Yeah, I don't even know who he is. So, yeah, I don't know if it's true or not true, but don't even know who the guy is.
But we do know that he was trying to rescue some kids who were stuck in a cave. And for Elon Musk to kind of be butthurt about this and then say, oh, well, you're a pedophile, it didn't really shine well on him. And that was actually one of the things that made the stocks fall when he did that. So it also goes to show you that if you're going to have a feud with someone on the internet, there's going to be repercussions. And sometimes
choose a less sympathetic figure than the guy that just rescued a bunch of kids from a cave.
Right, right. If you're going to call someone a pedophile, maybe you should actually accuse a pedophile instead of like a guy who's rescuing children. You know, so it's just kind of funny that because everyone was riveted to that story. Like everybody was like following it on a daily basis. And if one of the heroes of that story you're suddenly accusing without due cause, that may reflect badly on you. So just kind of interesting that Elon Musk, it feels like on some level he's kind of going off the rails a little bit.
It does a little bit. But you never know, because a lot of brilliant people have these little incidents. But yeah, maybe he will go like full Howard Hughes and he'll, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, one thing, he'll do it publicly, and it'll certainly be fun to watch.
Yes. Well, I mean, going on Joe Rogan and drinking whiskey and smoking weed on the on video is a pretty interesting choice in the midst
Well, it
of
is an
what was
interesting
already
choice,
going on.
but hold on one second. I will. Can you give me about 10 minutes? I'm almost done with the podcast. And then if you're quiet for just a few more minutes, I will get you a piggy candy. Is that a deal? Can we shake on it? All right. Good job, buddy. He's such a good kid. I love him. I love him. So we're gonna wrap up here because it sounds like I have to go get my little man some piggy candies. But the first thing I and he already had breakfast, so I'm not irresponsible on that level. But I would like to pivot just a little bit and talk about a movie that I saw when I was on the airplane because I had to fly all the way to America from the Netherlands to go to Burning Man, and I was finally able to see Solo, which was on the
Sorry to hear
on the
that.
plane. Man, okay. So, shall we do our review of Solo?
Yeah,
Our
let's go into it 'cause
geeky.
and okay, warning. The
Okay.
following review will contain spoilers. Viewer discretion is advised.
All right. That was the. I don't know what that sound was. It was the
Was
sound of
good. That was
walking,
that
walking
review. That
across
was a
the grassy
spoiler
field.
full. That was spoiler full review. We're allowed to spoil now. Feel free.
Okay, so Star Wars to me when I was a kid was it. Like my dad wrote Star Trek. But I was a Star Wars fan. Like I had the Star Wars sheets, I had the toys, I had the whole bit. I had one of the first Star Wars toys ever. Like I it was I wish I had hung on to it. It'd be worth a lot of money now. But the thing that Disney made this mistake. So they went into this to the Star Wars universe with like, well, we already have the Star Wars universe. We have it, right? They bought it for $4 billion, which looking back at it, that was probably a deal. And they were thinking this is already set up the way we spent, years setting up the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And the Marvel Cinematic Universe, in my mind, is awesome. I mean, they're even the worst of those movies is still highly entertaining.
Yeah.
And so I think that there was this kind of thought that like we can just make pretty much anything and people will watch it. If we film 2 hours of George Lucas taking a dump on R2-D2's head, people will spend money to see that movie, right? And what they ended up doing was they made The Force Awakens, which I felt was slightly contrived. And we talked about this a few weeks
It's
ago
a
where
soft reboot of A New Hope, which was the original Star Wars from 1977. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of The Force Awakens, but I'm not also that anti it. It didn't really render like a very strong emotional reaction either way. It was
Yeah.
good, but nothing, it wasn't like special, but it was good. So
Right. And the biggest problem I had with it, and I'll repeat myself, is that here you have, the ability to put Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, and Han Solo in a film together with Chewbacca and get the gang back together. That's who we want to see. And you don't do it. You kill off Han Solo. And just recently in an interview, Mark Hamill was like, "I don't even know what Luke Skywalker's story is anymore," right? That's not good.
Yeah.
And
Well, but
also.
yeah, The Force Awakens, the reason that it didn't bother me as much was because there were still two more movies left. Yeah, Han Solo, yeah, did die in that one, but there were still two more movies left, so it's like, okay, well, Luke Skywalker's gonna have an awesome arc. They can still get Leia and Luke together, like Luke and R2-D2, and have all these adventures still, so there's still hope. But
Right.
yeah,
And
that's still a
so
big missed
Disney,
opportunity.
yeah. And so what happened was Disney saw dollar signs. They didn't see like, how are we going to serve the fans best? So this is going back to what we were originally talking about at the top of this podcast is story first, right? So if you're going to make a trilogy, don't just like throw stuff out there thinking like, well, we just got to make Star Wars stuff, right? Because that's what fans want to see. No, Star Wars fans want to see Star Wars movies that tell good stories. And they didn't, they dropped the ball on that. So one of the things that they were thinking of is like, well, we're going to make a bunch of other movies outside of the trilogy. So we're going to have one Star Wars movie a year. Because, if we're releasing, 2 to 3 MCU movies a year, people will see one Star Wars movie a year. Well, that's not necessarily the case because Solo, okay? So for as far as a Star Wars movie goes, it was okay. As far as a
Yeah.
Han Solo movie goes, it really wasn't that fantastic. And it felt like, you know, they had trouble with that movie from the very beginning because they hired the brains behind
the
Lego movie, Phil Lord and
the other guy.
Yeah.
And Phil Lord and the other guy.
Yeah, and they fired them when the movie was almost done, and they hired Ron Howard to finish the movie off, but it was a mess. It was like, you know, like there was a whole sequence that took place on this. It was like a train heist where they're like, you know, they've got spaceships. Why do you need a train? I don't understand this, right? You know,
and for some reason, what's her name? Thandie Newton feels the need to sacrifice her life at the end of that heist. There's a lot of weird things going on.
Yeah, and it's got to be the black woman, right? Of course.
Yeah,
come on now. But the problem, the main problem with this movie is that it felt like they were setting up part one of a trilogy, which they were, right? So it felt like they left a lot of open things so they could tie it in later. And it felt like what they call in Hollywood a horrors movie, where if you have a movie that does really well, then they'll come up with a sequel just because they'll come up with a sequel. Or we've seen this before. They make a movie that they assume is going to do well. So they go, this is part one of a trilogy. Right?
Justice League.
Right. And so... So it was like they didn't really care about the fans. They cared about how can we squeeze as much money out of this thing as possible. The true Star Wars fans, I think, smelled this a mile away. And so a lot of people just stayed away from this movie. And so because of the backlash from The Last Jedi and because of the poor box office performance of Solo, all these other Star Wars projects that they had planned – they've scrapped. Even the Rian Johnson trilogy, I hear, is going to get scrapped now. The Obi-Wan Kenobi movie has been scrapped.
Well, at least on hold. I don't know if they're fully scrapped, but they're all on hold.
They're scrapped. They're scrapped.
They're probably not moving forward. Unless Episode 9 crushes it, then that's the only one that's really in production right now. And I think they're filming it currently. Episode 9.
Right. And so what they're going to do is they're going to wait and see what the box office performance of this final trilogy movie is going to be. And if it tanks, I have a feeling Star Wars is going to be put on ice for just a little while, because, you know, they're building that huge theme park, and, you know, if they kill that trilogy out of sheer neglect of really focusing on the fans, if J.J. Abrams cannot fix the trilogy that he helped break, man, that's going to be sad.
I mean, there's so much money in the merchandise and in the brand that, yeah, they can't afford to damage it through the movies. So they, you know, if the movies are doing damage and not helping, then that's very tragic when you invest $4 billion in something.
Right. I mean, they made their money back, obviously. And
but they're doing fine. I mean, even with the backlash, they're still – I'm not worried about Disney. But they could be doing better, and they've made some mistakes along the way. So hopefully they learn from them.
Yeah, and I think it's just one of these things where, again, it's like they felt, oh, we can just do pretty much anything and we're going to make money. And really it's like, no, we as a public – want to have a good story.
I think one of the cheap things they did in this movie in Solo was that the ending, right, where they have this twist ending, and again, spoiler alert, they bring up, for some reason, I don't really remember the movie that well, but somebody's boss was Darth Maul, who was from Episode 1. He's a character from Episode 1 that got his body chopped in half in Episode 1 and fell down like a endless pit. But somehow he survived that, and now, and I didn't even realize this from the movie, but I'm reading stuff online afterwards. I guess he has robot legs now, and there's actually on the internet today, there's some action figure of the Solo version of Darth Maul that's being promoted right now. They show the robot legs, so you can, if you Google it, you'll see the Darth Maul with the robot legs. But that was the evidence right there that this was their idea, was they're going to make a trilogy out of Han Solo movies. And it just showed you that they were thinking ahead. They weren't taking it one movie at a time. They weren't focused on the fans. Everything was about dollars and cents.
Right. And so, you know, and the toys that we can sell. Let's sell the everybody loved Darth Maul. Let's bring him back. And
everybody already has the Darth Maul action figure from episode one, but now they need the robot legs edition.
Yeah. And you know what? Look, if you have a fantastic character and you kill it off and it's like, you know, I mean, we don't need to see a Boba Fett origin story. We don't. It's like part of the mystique was that we don't know who that character is behind the mask. And once you kind of show that, you have that, you know, mystique, and then you kill that mystique, it kills the entire thing. Now, there is one exception.
I want a scene where Boba Fett is in, you know, he's getting like a shake, and it's like a Boba shake, and he doesn't have a name. He's like I don't know, he's an orphan or something, and they're like, oh, he likes Boba. Let's call him Boba.
That's right. You're referring to in the movie Han Solo when he just had the name Han, and he was signing up to fight in the Imperial Army for a moment.
Yeah.
He's
at the airport.
The guy asked him, is like, do you have a last name? And he goes, no, I don't have any family or anything. He goes, all right, so you're Solo. Han Solo.
Because like, we really, needed that. We really needed a backstory for the name. We couldn't just accept that it's his name.
Like, that was just – but now, however, I am going to the biggest geek news that I haven't touched yet. This is the biggest geek news
ever.
Oh,
my God.
This
was one
that, oh, yeah. That I was – when I heard this, I was like, hell yes. And I, like, stood up on my chair. I'm standing up my chair right now. I'm jumping on the couch like Tom Cruise. One fantastic science fiction character that they're bringing back, Jean-Luc Picard. Patrick Stewart is coming back in a new Star Wars series as Jean-Luc Picard. Hell yeah. I'm on the couch. I'm jumping up and down. I'm on Oprah. So that to me is like, folks, I cannot wait. We'll have more stories about that as that develops. I'm going to see if I can get some people who are involved in marketing around that on the show.
Are they bringing back Brett Spiner as Data? Are they bringing him back?
I don't know, but there was a photo recently taken of the old cast kind of all together and hanging out.
How are they looking these days?
Well, they're looking.
Patrick Stewart, you know, he was bald at a young age. It helps. That helps him age less later on.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart still looks like Patrick Stewart, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah.
So you know, he's Patrick Stewart. But anyway, that we'll have more developments as that unfolds. We're going to get some guests on in the next few weeks. Next week, we'll what are we going to talk about next week? Do we have any?
It's a secret. We're going to talk about how secrecy is very important in marketing.
That's right. That's right. And and we're also going to big news. We are planning another webinar for all you folks out there. And that's a secret thing, but we want to invite all 7 listeners to come and check out that webinar. And if you have any questions for us, feel free to connect with me, Andre Sturgeon, and Justin Womack on LinkedIn.
Email us at realmarketinggeeks@gmail.com. So realmarketinggeeks@gmail.com. Just go ahead and email us there. That's our dedicated line for the fans of this show.
And we're building a website.
So that's like super prestige.
Yeah, so we're going to build a website where all the shows will be archived and there'll be photos. It's not ready yet.
We've gone as far as purchasing the domain.
But, you know, I had a Burning Man conference.
Yeah, you're busy. Yeah.
But yeah, that's right. So that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes another episode of Marketing Geeks. In a time when marketing is in trouble. In a world filled with bad advertising and people who don't know what they're doing, 2 men will rise. Marketing.
Put your emotions out there. All your love, all your hate, everything you've got, just put it on the line because we believe in a cause. We believe in marketing. That's what we stand for. That's who we are. We are marketers.
Marketing geeks, we are one in this world. All right, Mini Geek.
I am marketing.
Mini Geeks, say goodbye. Say goodbye to the people out there.
Goodbye.
I am a marketer.
I love you.
I love you.
Oh, I love you.
All right, everybody. From the Netherlands.
All right, everyone. Stay.
Andre Sturgeon.
Stay classy. Stay classy. Just do it. Stay
close. Yeah, way to go. Good show. Yeah.